Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We're now going to be chatting to Dr. Gerard Labuschagne, forensic psychologist. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic, and yourself?
Hello, fantastic. Great, thank you. Can we talk today about how families should handle ransom negotiations? And what is the importance of a hostage negotiator during a hostage negotiation?
Thanks a lot. We always say that it's not something you want to do yourself. I know there's circumstances where people don't have the option to get someone to assist them, but it really is a better idea to get people who understand how these procedures work, what not to do, which could make things worse, and what's the best way to go forward. But sadly, what we typically find, though, is that in the beginning, you know, people are flooded with people contacting them, giving them advice, giving them information, making them lots of promises. They will track and trace their family member. And typically, it's private investigators. And we typically say that really be careful, because if someone, a professional group, has kidnapped your family member, probably you're only going to get them back if you do a negotiation. But people cling towards sort of old-fashioned, let's catch the bad guys and get our family member back kind of route, which almost never is successful. And is also one of the most dangerous times for a hostage is when somebody tries to release them, what we call a tactical release.
Right.
So you always say you really want to start talking from the start, that you don't set the negotiations up to failure and not ignore that aspect. And like I said, there are people privately who have experience in this. And again, we get a lot of private investigators who say, well, they'll also do that for them. And typically, you know, private investigators are not trained negotiators. So as I said, the police do have actually quite a good quarter of hostage negotiators that have been quite well trained. I don't know, you know, they haven't trained for a couple of years, as far as I know, some new group of people. But, you know, I did the police hostage negotiation course, I think, back in about 2007. And it really was a top-notch course. But, like I said, people often fear going to the police because they might be threatened if you do go, we'll do something to your family member, or they just might not trust the police, which is understandable. But as I said, in terms of the hostage negotiators, they are actually quite good, and they should be allocating people who understand kidnap for ransom, because that's also different to the typical kidnappings, which could be a family kidnapping or kidnapping for other reasons, you know, et cetera.
Absolutely. And what would you say is the role of a hostage negotiator?
Well, it's basically to talk until the person's released.
That's so the only it's job. To negotiate the release.
Absolutely. So, and that's also important to understand that investigation and negotiation are two separate concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And typically your negotiators will not interact with the investigators because they don't want to be influenced in the negotiation process by things that are going on that side. So let's say the detectives are saying, we're so close to catching these people, and that might influence how you negotiate. But what happens if those detectives don't catch those people and you haven't followed on with the sort of the proper procedures? That can put you in behind or could have led you to make mistakes in those phases when you thought, well, this is probably going to be resolved tomorrow, so I just have to keep these guys on the line. So the investigation and negotiation are completely separate procedures. This is why we say if a private investigator is promising you that they will do both, that already tells me that they don't understand how these things work. And as I said, it's to talk until that person's released. We're not trying to catch the bad guys. We're not trying to pull the wool over their eye. We're not trying to play tricks with them. We are talking using the hostage negotiation principles to safely and quickly, and obviously trying to reduce the amount, get the person back. And also with the intention that we try and prevent that this doesn't happen again, or that the kidnapping gets delayed. Because sometimes if you negotiate badly, you do things that you shouldn't have done, and they don't release, and they try for more money. So it's all about building in those procedures to prevent that from happening.
Thank you for that clarity. And the hostage negotiator, do they typically work independently? I mean, or with the police? How do you work? How do they work?
Yeah. So as I said, obviously the police have their own, and that there will be obviously some liaising. Yeah. But as I said, the negotiators typically still keep separate from the detectives. There are people such as myself who have left the police who were trained as negotiators who are now either independent or working for some certain security companies like TSU has got a very good hostage negotiation capability. But a lot of people are also working for insurance companies because you do get kidnapped for ransom insurance. So if you believe that your family might be at risk for this happening or that your business sends people throughout different parts of the world where there is a risk for this happening, you can actually buy insurance. And then when such an event happens, you contact your insurers. They have their allocated negotiators from those regions who understand what's going on in those regions. and they will then start to negotiate. And of course, the insurance would also pay for that and potentially pay for the expense of the actual ransom money.
So just going back to that point, the hostage negotiator was sort of working independently. I mean, if you are independent, how would the police be aware as regards to where you are, what's happening, etc.?
So sometimes the families don't want the police involved at all.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's absolutely no interaction.
Right.
So I have, for example, worked on cases where the family said, we said to the family, we are happy to work with the police negotiators if they would like that. But we typically say you can't have two people trying to be in charge. So the family would typically say then, police negotiators, we want you to work with our ones, but they are the ones ultimately who make the final call. And of course, this is always with the family's involvement in what decisions are made. But you can't have two heads butting, you know, there can't be two chiefs in the same little tribe. So you have to have, from the start, decided who's going to play the primary role and the final decision maker in the negotiation strategy. And I've done that before, and it's worked well, and I knew many of these people that I was working with in the police. So that already I had that history with them. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, unfortunately, on both sides where the personalities might not work well. But my philosophy would always be, I'm happy to work with the police if the family want me to. But as I said, you know, keeping in mind that my goal is separate to the detective goal. Yeah, if they're negotiators, not police, always happy to work with them. But then again, that's really the family's decision because it's their case. And the families can say to the police, I'm sorry, we don't want you to negotiate. Carry on with your investigation, but we don't want you to be involved in the negotiation. The police cannot force the family to accept their negotiation assistance.
Now, that is a very interesting point. Thank you for that. The how much does the hostage negotiator have full negotiation rights? I mean, can he, on a whim, change, add, whatever? Does he have the full rights to do that?
No, so what you would do responsibly is, as I said, you work with the family to guide them. You would have a small group of people that you would discuss the overall strategy so that when that next call or contact comes, we know what is our strategy for that particular call and the way forward. And we have sort of parameters that we all discuss and agree to. Because you don't want a situation where you unilaterally make a decision and it either doesn't go the way that you'd hoped and the family is angry with you. So it has to be a collaborative decision with those one or two close family members. They are part and parcel of the decision-making so that we all are on the same page. And we always say that even if a family decides they want to do something contrary to our advice, we will still help them to try and implement that strategy in the way that's going to be the least damaging. I mean, I have had certain scenarios where the family just continued to withhold information from us. So we just said, sorry, you employed us to help you, but you're keeping us away from information that you'll tell us a week later has come in a week past, and we can't work like that because we can't develop a proper strategy if we're not being given, you know, told about some of the phone calls that have come in and you guys are on your sideline doing your own, you know, processes. I mean, that obviously can't work. So it has to be the collaborative process with the family with certain parameters that you know before you go into it. And it's very rare that you have to give someone an answer at the spur of the moment. We always say we need to take this back and discuss it. And that's kind of the pattern you set up, that it's never they can demand you to give an answer immediately. It does not work that way.
It doesn't. This discussion has been enlightening. Dr. Gerard Labuschagne, forensic psychologist, thank you for your time, and thank you for these valid points. It is greatly appreciated.
My pleasure.